want to do is, yes, you will kind of hear bits of repetition that you've heard from Michelle already, but in a sense, repetition is no bad thing, because the R&I is a huge thing to get your head around, particularly when it's so nice outside and you're all just longing for the term to end. And of course, we know that repetition fixes things quite well in the mind. But what I want to do in this session is to look at really the major choice that you will have to make, the choice that will underpin everything else that follows with your R&I. And that is whether or not your R&I is going to be empirical, of which more later. Don't worry if you come across all these strange terms. I thought about doing one of these, you know, flying all the terms you might possibly come across, and when I got to 50 I just kind of gave up, so don't worry. Is it going to be empirical or is it going to be library based? And these are really the choices that you will have to make. And the ramifications, of course, will find all their way through your choice of supervisor, your research methods, your focus, absolutely everything. So we really want you to not necessarily to have decided absolutely and utterly, but at least by the end of this session, to have a really good idea of where it is that you sit in these two approaches. So, as Michelle has said, you've got your no less than 8,000, no more than 10,000, but in actual fact, trying to aim for round about 9,000. And having had to cope with my students this year, who, you know, would send me an email and say, hey, I've got 15,000 words, any suggestions? To which my response was just to tear my hair out very quietly. Actually, working towards that 9,000 is really, really important. But you've also got things running along in the background that you need to consider. First of all, your personal interest. There is absolutely and utterly no point whatsoever in doing something that doesn't interest you. You will hate it. Absolutely hate it. So it has to be something that you are genuinely interested in. Doesn't matter how strange, how far-flung, how wacky. After all, this is the woman who wrote her PhD on schemes of working key stage 3 history. So trust me, you know, absolutely nothing lives up or actually lives down to that. So it has to be of personal interest. You have to make sure, as Michelle has said, that there is somebody willing to supervise you. And your relationship with your supervisor is going to be really, really important. So you need somebody who, well, yes, first of all, is willing to supervise you. But then secondly, you also need to consider, can I actually get on with that person? Will I enjoy spending 6 hours in that person's company? Am I going to feel kind of overawed all the time? Why have I got a supervisor I can't stand? You know, etc., etc., etc. So your relationship with your supervisor is going to be really fundamental. And then thirdly, even if you've got the wackiest idea in the world, which is fine, are there actually the resources available that you will need? So if you have to travel to the other side of the world, well, that could be something of a problem. Also, and I've put this in red because it is something that I know from all my experience is paramount. First of all, whatever you decide to do, you have to be able to do it in the time available. And at the moment, that time just seems to stretch into the future. But actually, it's probably no more than 4 or 5 months. With all the best will in the world, you've got the long back ahead of you. You've got things that you're doing. So somewhere within all of that, and fixing it all up so that it doesn't come into conflict with your other 4 papers, it has to be very realistic. And secondly, while you might have the most fantastic idea of an area that you want to investigate, actually in 9,000 words, you'll probably be able to investigate about that much on a good day with the wind in the right direction. So you need, please, to really focus in on what it is that you are interested in. Okay? You just cannot, for example, look at education across across the entire 20th century. As I said yesterday, one of my students was looking at the selling off of education in America, and she pretty soon realized that that was an absolute impossibility. She was then going to look at a state. That was impossible as well. And eventually she settled on 2 particular districts in Chicago. So she had a very, very, very broad base to begin with, and gradually it narrowed and narrowed and narrowed. And that is something really important that you need to be considering. Okay, I'm going to introduce you to 2 words, which before I came back into academia, I could just about pronounce, but I certainly couldn't spell. And those 2 words are ontology and epistemology. Because if you think about any kind of building, the building is absolutely rubbish if it does not have what we call footings. In this case, whatever is, actually this is a conservatory, and you can see that the builders have dug a whacking great trench and filled it with concrete, and the conservatory will sit on top of that. Well, it's the same with your research. You are going to have to be able to answer these 2 questions, and they're called ontology. What can you actually know about something? And then epistemology, how can you actually get all the information about that particular thing? So you're sitting there thinking, oh God, not all this again. How on earth does this impact on me? Well, it has a profound impact. I am speaking in generalizations, so when you do your reading, you'll find all of this padded out. But essentially, there are 2 ways to think about your research. One is that what you are investigating, in other words, the reality of what you're investigating, is something objective. It is there, it exists, and you are going to have a look at this phenomena, this thing, and you're going to try to discover all kinds of causal relationships and so on. The other view, the other worldview, a theoretical perspective, whatever you want to call it, is to say, no, actually, reality isn't kind of a given, it's not a thing sitting out there waiting to be discovered. It's actually very, very subjective. And everybody constructs their own reality. And therefore, instead of adopting what is essentially a scientific, objective method, I'm going to investigate it through an interpretation of the data. Because actually, my concern is with the people. How do they think? How do they respond to events? I've got a group of people, but they're all different. What does that tell us about the thing that we are studying? And unlike objective, where one hopes that what you find is fixed, because you've subjected it to triangulation and so on, with this one, a subjective interpretation, it could be that somebody comes along 5 minutes later and says, actually, your research is rubbish. I think it should be interpreted like this. And if you've ever worked with children, you will know that they will say one thing 1 minute and something completely different the next. So, okay. Anybody recognize this photograph? It's a fantastic school in South London called the Evelyn Grace Academy. And it's designed by Zaha Hadid, well, the late Zaha Hadid, who was one of the great architects of the late 20th, early 21st century. She designed the Pringle, remember the pool at the London Olympics? And she had a terrifying brief. She had to design this school to fit essentially between two main roads. I haven't shown you all of it, but I think this gives you a very good idea. Here are some of the classrooms. And they've even managed to link kind of both ends of the site. They've managed to install a 100-meter running track for athletic purposes. It's like no school you've probably ever seen before. But I've put that up there because I'd like you to consider how could you approach. Imagine that you are looking at this. Imagine that it is a thing, it's there in front of you. How might you approach a piece of research about this school, first of all, by looking at it objectively? Anybody got any ideas? Nothing stupid. I spend my life being stupid. I see no reason why you shouldn't either. So, objectively, that there is a reality out there that is given and that we can investigate. So, how might you start that? Yeah.
Looking at results.
You could look at the results of the school, yes, and you could subject them to a barrage of statistical tests. Thank you. What about the picture that you see there? Yeah.
You could look at dimensions and materials used.
Yes. And what would you be trying to find? I mean, that's only half the. But you're absolutely right, that's only kind of half of it.
Maybe the impact of those, you could link it to results, and maybe the impact of these materials and dimensions on students' learning and results.
Exactly. So to tie in with what we've heard already, you can see that actually these particular rooms, they are very, very bright, intentionally so. So could we actually conduct a piece of research if we put a group of students, as it were, in the shade and another group of students in the light, would we have different results as a consequence? Anything else? Any other?
Yes.
You know, if I said, right, you're doing your research on this. Yes.
We could look at the official policy and the official statistics of like numbers of students and teachers.
Yeah. Yes, you could look at the official documents. You could investigate, for example, truancy. You know, it says X number of people are at school, how many people are actually there? Now, I said that this is a I don't think you could find a more modern school. You know, what might be the impact of pupils here aware that runners are having a PE lesson down below? Does it cause distraction? Would the use of blinds make concentration better? Anything else? How might you, here you are, you're looking to find, looking to be objective. You're not trying to interfere with the, necessarily with the building, other than for the point of your study. Anything else can you think of? Anything else you might do with that? Anybody else? Okay, so how might you kind of approach the same scene, but through a subjective approach, through an interpretivist approach? Yeah.
Like, give people questionnaires about their opinions about the new school.
Yes. You could, but how would you, the questionnaires, how might you think about displaying them?
Like open questions and like qualitative.
Yes, and how might those be used to take your study further forward? Because questionnaires can often be sort of associated with trying to find something objectively. Yeah.
Is it like, so that the questions are tailored in a certain direction, so they're asking like, do you agree with this, rather
yeah.
than just going, what's your opinion on this?
Yes, yes, instead of kind of a straight no or yes, what's your opinion on this? And then you could use that to select some students to follow up for an interview, for example. What about these pupils here? I mean, they must have the strangest running track in the world, I suspect. Linking the two entrances to the school, how do they feel about their PE lessons effectively being conducted in full view of other pupils? Any other thoughts?
Mm. Maybe kind of finding out access to green spaces or whether they're literally just running. If that's their only, like, as a sports walk?
Yes, yes. Yes. Do the people who are doing this, you know, do they actually enjoy, because it's only 100 yards, do they have a sports hall where they can do other things? You know, what happens if you want to be a 400 metre runner? You know, what do? You endlessly going up and down here. How do they feel about, you know, as I said, being overlooked in what is often, particularly for girls, a rather private thing? You know, if you ever trying to get out of PE lessons, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So can you see, even with this one picture, we've got two kind of definite approaches that we can take. One very much instrumental, observation, questionnaires, the other looking to find that reality, the other much looser. A questionnaire, yes, but only perhaps to lead us to a group of really interesting pupils to interview. We're not so much concerned with, let's say, the temperatures up here. Having taught in a school in East London where the temperature in the summer used to reach 100 plus, and we just gave up and we just rested our head on our hands because cunningly, the regulations had a lower, they had a number below which, a temperature below which you couldn't teach, but nobody, because it's Britain and our lousy climate, nobody had actually thought to impose an upper number. So we were in this wonderful, like a glass box, with the sun beating down on us as we all passed out. So, you know, thinking about up there, could we do some kind of statistical analysis of the heat that is being produced? Other way, could we ask the pupils, let's say, how they feel about working in an atmosphere like that? So, I hope that by merely introducing you to this idea, perhaps already you are thinking, not doing that, or equally not doing that. I want to work with people. I want to understand them, I want to interpret what they're talking about. Here, you know, well actually, you know, collecting all this data on temperatures and so on sounds really, really interesting. And that's the kind of thing that I'd be interested in doing. So, that brings me back kind of to where I started. The sort of search for an ultimate reality, an ultimate truth, that falls under the label of empirical. And this is where we collect our data through things like observation, experimentation, questionnaires, statistical analysis, and so on. And one of my heroes, heroines, being gender neutral, Maggie Adder in Pocock, who presents the Sky at Night, who was actually told that she didn't stand a chance because she was dyslexic and stupid, and she might as well kind of give up now. And then Dame Athene Donald, who I think is Master of Churchill? She's the Master of Churchill. A world-renowned physicist. And these two women work in the field of empirical data. But if you are more interested in doing data collection and so on that relies on more sort of secondary sources, then you might be considering doing a library-based research. But we'll talk about that in a moment. However, within the notion of going out and collecting data or whatever, as we saw in our photograph, we can actually, yes, we can gather data that is primary data, but actually we can investigate it both in the way that these two women do, which is to subject it to strict analysis and so on, but you could also collect data and code it and discover what people were thinking, what their views were and so on, within what is called an interpretivist paradigm. But what if all of that doesn't really appeal to you? What if you don't feel that you're particularly up to that kind of work? Well, you could think about doing a piece of library research. So, Mary Beard, I'm sure you've all heard of, who's at Newnham, one of the best known classicists in the world. She's always being told off because by her own admission, she looks like the back of a bus. And it's nice to know that so many men agree with her. It's really chivalrous, isn't it? She also received death threats as well, the daring to say, actually, I don't care. I don't care what people think of me. I'm doing my job, I'm damn good at it, and tough. But Mary Beard doesn't hop off and interview a group of Romans. She doesn't take herself off to ancient Greece. But what she does do is work with predominantly secondary sources. So for her latest book, she has been, yes, she's been using artifacts and things that were found, but she's also been making use of the secondary sources from the literature. And therefore, if you are more interested in doing something like this, then you will be working not with primary data that you've gathered, but with secondary data that already exists. And it exists in libraries, in databases, online. And again, what you are doing is exploring different ideas, trying to see whether things match up, or are we laboring under a misconception, or what X said was not exactly what X meant. So you've got two approaches: the empirical, where you collect your primary data, and the library-based report, where you are effectively using secondary data. Are we clear? So I hope sort of you're thinking, well, I think at the moment I'm kind of moving towards that. So what are the implications? Well, the implications are that probably if you know your heart belongs to particularly psychology and to an extent sociology, you may well find yourself drawn, but you don't have to be at all. But it normally follows that you're possibly more interested in empirical data. If you are in something like history, philosophy, aspects of sociology, policy studies and so on, you may find yourself more drawn towards library-based research. But of course, there's absolutely nothing to stop you switching. Now, this is just to give you some thoughts. And if you're going to do something using your subject studies, like, let's say, data related to the teaching of biology, or music, or whatever it might be, then according to what you feel happiest with, you may be looking at empirical research gathering or library-based research. So, what's your empirical report going to look like? Well, don't be frightened. Your empirical research, it's going to be about the sampling, so how have you gathered your data? It's going to be about how you code it. What do the findings say? What are the implications of this for further research and so on? But there's going to be a very, very big emphasis on sampling, on your methodology, on your instrumentation and your data analysis. If you're going to produce a library-based report, well, it's going to be much the same, except it's highly unlikely that you will be using statistical analysis. And I'll talk about that in just a moment. So you'll really be looking at, you know, books, e-books, journals, official publications, databases and so on. And you'll be setting up some kind of a hypothesis and then seeing whether the data actually matches it. Okay, so far? Stop me if I'm rambling. In which case I'd never speak another word. So what is an example of a piece of library-based research? And these are three of my students over the past couple of years. One, and this received a first, one was really fed up because people kept on saying that the 1944 Education Act introduced a tripartite system of grammar schools, secondary models, and technical schools. And why was she so fed up? Well, because actually she knew that when you looked at the Act itself, it said no such thing. It was the LEAs, the local education authorities, who interpreted what the Act said as meaning they could set up grammar schools, secondary models, and the tripartite system. So she looked at a tiny sort of time frame. She really only looked at a period of about 15 years. And she examined the literature to argue that actually, when people talk about the tripartite system, they've got it all wrong. That the tripartite system was really primary, secondary, and higher education. And as I say, her work received a first. Another piece of work, completely different, involved somebody who had been living in Switzerland for quite a while. And they were very, very interested in what is, still is, called the International School of Geneva. Now, when she started her library research, her research covered the past, when was it started? 1924. It covered almost 100 years. And it soon became very clear that that was impossible. So eventually, she just discussed the 1920s and 30s. She took it up to the outbreak of the Second World War. And she was looking to see how far the ideals that the international school had set itself were actually carried out in practice. And she too received a first for her work. And she had a whale of a time because guess where the archives were? Now this is really, really sad. And she had to take herself off to, would you believe, Rome to access some of the archives. I tell you, she was desolate, absolutely desolate. But, you know, she stuck it out. So, you know, completely different from the first one, but you know, equally interesting, absolutely fascinating in fact. And then this, you're far too young to know anything about this, but Cambridge, the faculty here, produced the biggest report into primary education since the Plowden report in the 1960s. And guess what the government said? Well, that's all very interesting, but actually we're not interested. And primary teachers pulled their hair out and used lots and lots of naughty words. But the government were adamant. They effectively couldn't care less. And so this also got a very, very high first. And what she did, yes, she had all the documentation, and she had all the newspaper clippings where the government said thanks but no thanks, but she actually went out and she interviewed some of the faculty staff who'd worked on the primary report. And this was what she did. She wrote to all the ministers, most of whom never replied, but she got a top civil servant agreeing to an interview. And even the people who had been involved with the primary report had no idea about some of the things that he said. So it was absolutely eye-opening to get the civil service view into the primary report. And in fact, it would appear that the civil service were urging the government to take it really seriously. And the government just said, yeah, so we haven't got the money, we're not going to do it, tough, thanks but no thanks. But in her work, she actually found out that the civil service, the advisors, were saying something completely, completely different. So that gives you some idea of some areas that can be covered by a piece of library research. Of course, what this student did was actually to include some data collection as well in the terms of interviews. There's nothing to stop you doing that as well. Now, as I said yesterday, this is the kind of photograph that puts fear into people. Does anybody recognise it? Not only is it the most phallic building in England, if not the world, but it's called the University Library. And it is a repository, actually, of every book that is published, everything that's published every day in the UK. So it's an absolute treasure trove. And even more importantly, it has a fantastic cafe. But we've got the UL, every college has their own library. The faculty, as we've heard already from Michelle, is absolutely brilliant. For example, if you wanted to do something with the teaching of environmental studies, we've got the Botanic Gardens. One of the foremost teaching gardens in the world. So you've got an awful lot of resources available to you. And they go from, this is the Chained Library in Trinity Hall. They go all the way, you know, to the world of the future and our own dearly beloved faculty. I have to say, the librarians, I think, are the best in Cambridge. Absolutely brilliant. And they will help you. You know, it's not just an empty promise. Go and talk to them and they'll get you sorted out. Equally, of course, we have got scientific libraries. Don't forget that as well. And, of course, as Michelle was saying, there are lots of things to help you with data analysis if you're thinking that that is a bit alarming at the moment. Now, I'm going to pose you some questions. This is, of course, a mythical student.
So the question.
Okay.
So, I put that up rather flippantly, but actually, if you are really interested in empirical research, but the thought of going out and collecting data by the thousands fills you with fear and dread, that's quite understandable. But within the faculty, we actually have research that is ongoing that you can join. Working with PhD students, with different research groups, and you will join them and you will help them in analysing their data. Perhaps you'll be given a particular bit to do. So, as I say, if the thought of doing all this by yourself fears you, fills you with fear and dread, then this is a really, really good way round it. And this is what Michelle has to say about it. Involve the students in cutting edge research, and that is actually happening, it's not just a vain boast. And eliminate the stress of feeling like they need to create their own project from scratch. And you can investigate all those research groups and so on, I believe, through Moodle. How long is all of this going to take you? Well, if you're going to sort of work in the field of empirical research, you are talking about 100 hours or so. So that's, you can do the maths yourself about how many days that is. But of course, that is only something like a rough guide. You'll need additional time, of course, to read all the literature and to write everything up. So you are probably looking at about 120, 150 hours of research. And it's much kind of the same time for those who are interested in doing library-based research. Now, a big fear about empirical research is handling these huge data sets. How the hell do I do it? Now, it's difficult to believe, but I was once in this situation. I had to take, as part of my MPhil, I had to take a statistics paper. Now, this is somebody who was thrown out of school, out of class, on a regular basis, because as some of you know, I subtract by addition. I know, wonderful, isn't it? But it meant that actually, when I realised I had to take this paper for my MPhil, I was terrified. And I thought, there is absolutely no way I'm ever going to get to grips with this. You know, I can't even subtract. How the hell am I going to cope with huge data sets? But the answer was to actually throw myself sort of headlong into it, to work with my friends, to buy workbooks, to read about it. And in the end, you will not believe, but statistics and the use of SPSS actually became my favourite paper. I just loved it for some reason. I really, really engaged with it. So if you're sitting there thinking to yourself, well, I really like the sound of this and working with research groups, but actually I can't hack the statistics. Trust me, if I can do it, anybody can do it. And as we've heard from Michelle, there is an awful lot of support within the faculty. There's that paper, SOC 5. There are courses run, there's maths for statistics. And the world is crying out at the moment for people with statistical skills. So it is a very transferable skill. This is a highly desirable skill. And don't forget that we've got the Quant Methods Centre, where they run courses, they've got documentation, there's help and so on available. And of course, we've also got, any of you come across Anna already, Anna Vignoles? She does a lot of work for the government and so on, so she is a, absolutely out there somewhere, statistical analysis, and we've got Michelle as well. So, you know, we are not lacking people within the faculty to whom you can turn. And, of course, there is that promise of a prize. Anybody recognise this? As you will. 53 weeks, 54, 55, 56 weeks from now. It's a copy of the Warwick Vase in the middle of the Senate Court, Senate House in Norman. And you'll be draping yourselves around it and putting silly faces and grabbing all your friends who don't really want to be in your selfie when you actually graduate. So that's at the end of this month. So actually it is only 54 weeks, just to cheer you up. So, I hope what I've been trying to do is to get you to think about which area, empirical or library-based, do you think that you will feel happiest. If you don't want to have to compile those huge data sets yourself, then there is a solution available. If you already have an inkling of which way kind of you want to jump, don't completely discard the other way. You know, do have a think and be really, really certain. Get hold of a supervisor, as Michelle said. You know, it's a bit like the last bottle of water in Tesco's. It will be going very soon. They only have a finite number of people that they can take on. So do approach them, have a word with them. This is what I'm interested in. Use the summer holidays to be working up your focus, and remember, the smaller it is, the more likelihood you will have of producing a good piece of work. And really, it's time for me to shut up. Bless you, Dave. So, any questions you'd like to ask me? Yeah.
For the three examples that you showed just now,
yeah.
They
were working within what is called an interpretative paradigm. So, which is, they were, if we have empirical with that kind of objective truth, they were working within truth is constructed. Because, do you remember I talked about the interview with the civil servant? Well, that civil servant could have turned around the next day and said, oops, remember what I told you? Forget it, I shouldn't have said that. And therefore the whole piece of work would have been completely different. Whereas if that were a piece of quantitative research, it would have stood.
What about the first one, about the apartheid?
That was again interpretative. They were looking at documents, they were looking at interviews with people, they weren't subjecting the documents to statistical analysis or anything else. They were dealing with, you know, kind of real people who, the civil servants who wrote the 1944 Act. The problem was it had been interpreted in a different way. That was never what was intended. Yes?
Can you conduct interviews if you're doing a library-based?
Yes, you can include interviews in library-based research. That would be absolutely fine. I keep wanting to use her name, but I can't. But she's still here. The one about the 1944 Act, all three of them included interviews, although they were predominantly library-based. Yeah?
Is there an opportunity to receive funding for things that might, like if you found out that what you needed was in Rome, is there...
You would have to ask Diru. Are you at Homerton?
No.
Ah, right. Well, you won't have to ask Diru then. There may be funding available through your college, there may be funding, it's unlikely there's funding available through the faculty, but each college has different travel scholarships and things, so you might be able to apply for that. Sorry, there are other people with their hands up. Oh, you've all suddenly gone quiet. Yeah.
I was just going to ask whether, should you want to do something empirical based, but you don't want to do the whole, I'm going to do my own information, but then there's not a research project to join. Is there a way of like
then you, there might be. You would have to go and talk to people in the faculty and see. you might then be thrown back on your own, you know, solutions. But there may well be. There's so much research going on in the faculty.